So, Tim Hedrick.
Hello.
Welcome to mild titillation. Okay, just start us off. We've still got Unreal Unreal? No, we haven't. But that's the second one. No, we need the covers, the sequence of covers, but we'll start it in a second.
Sequence
of covers? Yeah.
So you
were on, sorry. It's okay, we've got a question or two before we do this. While Paul's sorting that out, any comment? I've dropped that that little time I'm calling you. That idea about let's not get too high blown, about it being an incredible piece of artwork, it's only there to titillate people. It's just a marketing tool at the end of the day. People have to glance at the front cover, make a decision, is this my kind of book? Pick it up, and then you've got them on the hook.
Pretty much.
What's your reaction as a photographer to that as a kind of... Is that how you conceive what you're doing?
No, it's not a great surprise that it's looked at in that way. The reason we might get onto the reason I wanted to do book covers and book illustration came through also doing CD covers and music illustration is I'd originally been a magazine and newspaper photographer. Newspapers last a day, magazines last a month, and books and CDs hopefully last a wee bit longer than that. So again, it's just pure, I suppose, kind of selfish aggrandizement, really, that it just have something around for longer. But the idea of a book, if you pick up a book, you might take... If you're an avid reader, you could maybe take 2 or 3 days to read it. If you're a slow reader like me, even longer. So the idea that an image or an illustration is in people's minds for longer is on the one hand fantastic, on the other hand it puts a little bit more pressure and weight on what it is you do produce. Because the greens are slightly different because it's item-based usually. It's a prop, it's something. If it's a person, then that person, whether you like it or not, is then almost irrevocably linked to the character in the book, potentially. And again, if you read something, we all paint pictures in our minds about what that person actually does look like. If you're faced with this is what that person actually looks like, it takes away some of that sort of that interest and a bit of that intrigue. Which is, I think, is why, and we'll get on to the green titles. It all came through the Graham Greene estate, with quite a rigid list of what they wanted on the covers, none of which was ever a person or a recognisable person.
I'll come back to that.
Okay.
I mean, now you're through. You've done the series. I don't know if there are any more.
No, that's it. That's all done. I think 36 I did in total.
Did it ever cross your mind that maybe 4 years after you're dead and gone, there will be people out there and they'll have a book on their bookshelves which has a Tim Hetherington cover?
I haven't looked that far forward. Unless you know something I don't. No, again, I think it's quite nice sometimes if we go, right around to see friends and you can look avidly look on the shelf and talk about myself for a little bit. It's quite nice going to bookshops. It's great, really nice. I teach at the moment. We take students to places and they're sometimes avidly, finding stuff. Going abroad and finding things is quite nice. It's quite an interesting sort of trail. Whereas I say, when it was purely newspaper, unless you happen to be in the days of print, unless you happen to be in that town on that day, the next day, that image unfortunately is gone.
Okay. Now, what I hope we do, just to begin with now, I think Paul's got us to that point now, is before we go a bit further about Tim's career and then eventually getting onto the covers, I just wanted to have, without any commentary, any discussion between the two of us, to run a sequence of Tim's covers. I've started with a couple of ones that are the old format, this kind of half-page format, just to remind you that there are still some of those out there. I've got some of these on my shelf. Uh-huh. And then we'll go to a full sequence of the full-page ones that are now the vintage classics. And I've tried to put them in, I think, chronological order of Green's writing and issuing them. I may have got that wrong in some of them. But just so we know what we're talking about, let's run the sequence.
I know you didn't want any commentary, but the originals were shot, we'll talk technicality, the originals were shot as landscapes in 6x9 format on transparency. And then when the relaunch came, when they wanted full bleed cover, the quality was so good that they just nicked a portrait aspect from the landscape. So I didn't have to reshoot them. Strange looking at them. Like that BAFTA thing when someone's died. That's my least favourite one. Because I baked that cake. It was horrible. That's my favourite one. We're going to talk about that one, aren't we? Is that one of the ones we're going to talk about? I really like that one. Okay, I love that one.
I think that's
it. Thank you.
Well, aren't they good? And that's just to put in your mind the kind of images, some of which we'll pick out individually later to just discuss the clear one and stuff like that, each and every one of them. Just to say, by the way, that I put those images together too, just as kind of a beginning point for our interview. And they're not as sharp, obviously, as the real thing. So my apologies to the photographer for the quality of the
lack. They're not far off, Michael, don't worry.
Okay. While we discuss, what I want to do is to have some images coming up on the second lot of PowerPoint, which we'll be on to in a second, because I want to get on to focusing on the Graham Greene course specifically, but just very quickly, Tim, you're going to find your whole life passing very quickly in front of your eyes.
Yeah, okay.
Because I picked out, I think, four images from your general portfolio stuff that you sent me. And I'd just really like you to spend a minute in each case just saying where taken, mm-hmm. what circumstances, your comment on it as a photograph.
Okay.
Give us any context for that one to start.
Okay, this is me breaking the rules of photography. When I was a student, I travelled very interested in Eastern Europe. This was at the end of the 1980s, so I had a month in, as was Yugoslavia, before the conflict started. This is in Kosovo, in a small market town called Peć, just outside Pristina. And I spent a few days in Kosovo again, as a very interesting part of Europe. This is a marketplace on a Saturday morning. I can't even quite remember the context. It was an image that I shot and we got back and processed, obviously shooting on film. When I got back to college and processed it, it stood out. I really liked it. Again, it's a small marketplace. There's fire, it's noise, it doesn't communicate necessarily, but in my mind I could be there. It was yesterday. Behind me there was an old butcher's shop, and they were very interested in what I was doing. I went in and I photographed in the butcher's shop, and they said, "Come back, you must come back for lunch." Lunch consisted of a cow's brain on a platter, which I was given honorary dibs with a hunk of bread. I somehow managed to decline. Again, very sort of generous, very generous people. Obviously, it's an ethnic Albanian area, and it was, and obviously transpired to be a very interesting and unfortunately sort of quite a turbulent spot during the subsequent conflict. I went back and worked in the refugee camps 2-3 years later, initially as a photographer, and then as a volunteer. And again, it was just a trip, a college trip really. That yes, with quite a few interesting images resulting. This is football. This is Middlesbrough Football Club. Sometimes it's the one and only time that I was given a job that was like a dream, a boyhood dream come true. So I was given a commission. This is after college and after living in Eastern Europe and returning. I was given a commission to document the final year of the old football ground before they moved into their new all singing, all dancing stadium. So again, it was great behind the scenes, working with the team, getting to places really that I'd always wanted to go. I suppose the nature of photography is sort of generally sort of proposes being a quite inquisitive individual, nosy, I think. My wife would describe it as. It's being able to go places and maybe see places and borrow things and have access to things simply because you are a photographer. So again, this was just a series of images. I think I shot 10,000 images in that year. And again, that became a book and a travelling exhibition. And when I moved to London, it meant that my portfolio at that time was full of football. So I ended up then working for Manchester United and England and all the way down to West Ham and various football teams as a football photographer. This is during this skips backwards to mid 92. I lived in Prague for 2 years as a photographer and as a teacher. And myself and a great friend, my American professor, we went into Ukraine for a 2-week trip. I'm not sure if it's still the same, but now when you left Slovakia and entered Ukraine, the train had to be lifted and put onto wider wheels. So we all had to get off. The entire train was lifted and put onto a wider bogey, and then we set off into, as was the old sort of Soviet Union. I think it was to avoid being invaded by train. So part of this waiting around was in this small border town called Chop. And again, walking around, there's a couple of gentlemen. Don't worry, he's not dead. His friend was sort of jokingly putting a hand over his face sort of thing. But again, it was my first real sort of view of proper sort of statues and things like that. It was fascinating. This subsequently became a book cover. It wasn't shot as a book cover, but it was used by the Michael, who now is a published author, and he was writing a book about the new Europe, and that was on the cover. I do at the moment. I'm working on a series of sort of images of, I suppose, transit. We do a lot of travelling. I take the students on a lot of sort of trips, etc., etc. And I'm always quite interested in the idea of it's going to build into a body of work. Plus, it's also, if we take the students to, say, Amsterdam from Harwich to the Hook, it's a 7-hour crossing, so there's plenty of time to create work. But the idea of being not being one place or another, it's the idea of being in transit. So hopefully there's a body of work there somewhere. But also, they're quite loosely sort of illustrative, so, you know, it fits in. Anyway.
So, on to book covers. I think we might on the next five, just as a sequence before I ask Tim to comment.
Okay. Yeah.
Just, I mean, this is obviously, I don't know if it's chronologically before Green, but this is.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Just tell us about that.
This is. You can see Secker and Warburg. This so again came through Random House. The different way that you get commissioned, as I say, the Green series has been quite unique because it's such a well-known series of titles, and also with the estate being involved, there's another layer of commission. Generally speaking, if it's a brand new title, the author would write it, the manuscript would be edited and approved. The commissioning editor would then work with the art director, and they would come up with a list of either suggestions, or in my case, sometimes they would ask me to read the manuscript and come up with some suggestions for the cover. The book was set in Soweto. Cape Town. Sorry, yeah, it was Soweto. The author. The expenses, unfortunately, don't run to that. So, on the Essex coast, there's a town called Jaywick, quite a well-known sort of town. I wouldn't say it's very interesting. There's a lot of East End folk have moved out there and built their own homes. a lot of which has, I suppose, the echoes of the idea of a township. No offence caused to anyone who may be from Jaywick. So we went, and using the backdrop of, you know, this beautifully quite eclectic mix of colours and surfaces, etc., etc., we took a friend of mine, their daughter, and we just shot some images. Generally speaking, it was a series of portraits. But when you're in a place as interesting as that, it's just, the always rule of thumb is just to shoot round the subject, to gather textures, so that they can potentially use on the backs and on the spines too. So that was Soweto in Essex. Again, I think they chose, well, the odd thing being, because I shoot on film on transparency, which it's finding increasingly difficult to actually find a place to process it. When I first started, there were labs 24 hours a day that would do it for you. Now they do it 2 or 3 days a week, and sometimes they don't. So it is quite difficult to find places to process. I lost the thread I was going to say there. Sorry, so there, when you create the work and you send off sheets of transparencies, usually the very first time you see it, or the next time you see it, is when it's returned to you as a tear sheet, or you see it in the bookshop.
And in that particular case, you therefore did a whole series of images.
Yeah.
Are the four that we showed before this book cover the whole lot of images, or just four examples?
Four examples. There's maybe you'd shoot for half a day, a full day.
And you would send off.
You send off the lot.
Scores of images.
Yeah.
And a designer. Publishing house would then choose the one that's mm-hmm. going to be used, and how it will be positioned, and where the timing is going to be, and all that stuff.
Pretty much, yeah.
Then done by someone else.
Yeah.
Because I think when I first contacted you, I made the mistake of saying you design the vintage covers, and you said, "Oh, you'll get me into trouble."
You will, yeah. No, I don't.
Not to design. You are
the designers have now become much more prevalent in actually creating the work. During the economic crisis, they stopped commissioning and started to make the work themselves, which is when photography became a little bit less prevalent on covers. But no, you would send it off. Certain times you're actually given a grid to shoot to. I did a cover for a book.
Grid in the centre.
I know. Yeah, but also, yeah, with a title called 26A, and the designer heard it was quite a large 2-6 and an A. And it was positioned in a place that was, so when I shot, I actually had it so I could look through the camera to make sure that actually the element of the image would fit. But no, this is done completely. You are a quite a small cog. And as I say, sometimes you're surprised and think, oh, you've done a really good job. And other times, well, you've murdered that. But I think that's quite, you know, they've done quite a nice job. Yeah.
Okay, let's see a couple more, which are the same thing.
Okay.
Which
one's
vintage?
Yeah, vintage classic. This is probably the most straightforward cover, as you can well imagine. It's when you're dealing with something like Alice in Wonderland, there's nothing you can do that's new, and B, people don't want you to do anything new. It's a cyclical thing that they will, I suppose, if you are a publishing house and you license a well-known title, there needs to be, obviously, financial recompense, so they will, as you know, particularly with the green titles, every 3 or 4 years they'll repackage them. Something like Alice in Wonderland, it's just stripy tights, ballet shoes. It was very, very straightforward. It took about an hour to do it. But ultimately, again, it's so sort of kind of neutral that there's not a huge amount you can say.
And you chose the idea of stripy tights on a girl's legs.
No. That was requested. Stripy tights. I don't use digital. I shoot digital only to gather prop images. So I would go and I would purchase the tights, I'd buy the shoes, etc. And then you'd send a digital image off, and they'd say, "Yep, lovely, go ahead." At that point, it then gets committed to film, and I'd shoot maybe 30, 40 variations.
And this second one isn't actually a cover; it is obviously some advertising.
Yeah, sometimes they.
Does that mean that Vintage particularly liked this image to use it as a kind of iconic representation of the whole series?
There is that, but also the idea that compositionally it leaves quite a bit of space.
Yes.
If it's a very busy image, it's difficult for them to actually put text on it. So again, you're shooting with that in mind. As I say, I teach and we do projects, illustrative projects with the students. And you have to say that don't be offended, it's not you, it's this, it's that. But somebody is going to slap text across what you've done, because that's why you're doing it. So you have to sort of shoot with that in mind.
And just on that idea of, you know, my suggestion that maybe somebody in authority of vintage rather like that image, are there kind of prizes, awards in this kind of area?
Yeah.
The book cover
Oscars, yeah, they do have, you know, prize design prizes, etc. No, I haven't. I suppose a cover that went quite a distance was, I did a cover about 10, 12 years ago called The Time Traveller's Wife. Now that was shot in a field in Ipswich. It was done twice, and again, it's legs and it's a pile of clothes, and the story being that this girl waits and this chap arrives every now and then because he's a time traveller, and she waits for him with clothes because he always arrives with nothing on, etc. So that was picked up by Random House in America, and because Random House in America ran it, every other country wanted that version. So that went round the world twice. You know, you can see there's 18 different versions of it in different languages and different formats.
So there were people in Ecuador with a Tim Hetherington image on their
book? I'm not sure whether it went to Ecuador, but
potentially anywhere in the world.
Anywhere in the world, yeah.
And not just bits have been taken from the UK.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on. I think we're into green stuff now.
Okay.
Since there's a lot of text on this, can I just pick out one or two things that I think arise from this?
Mm-hmm.
First of all, just tell us what this is. I'll pick out, I think there are three elements, the dislikes, the likes, and the
quotes. It's great, isn't it? Dislikes and likes.
Okay, so this is something that you've got mm-hmm. that is part of the kind of design brief process that goes on.
Well, the green covers were quite unique because there were so many of them. Normally, it's one cover. Somebody would write something. If you're lucky, 2-3 years later, they'll write something else, and they'll maybe request you to do the next cover. But obviously, what you're dealing with here is a great body of work. As I say, I think at least 36 that I did.
It's
And they arrived, yeah, but they arrived in threes and fours, which was really nice, because then I could take my time to gather the props and shoot them in the order that I saw fit. But they arrived in threes and fours in the order that they were going to be published. I think the very first one I did was, the first batch included, I think, Our Man in Havana, which is one of my faves, etc., etc. Anyway, but they arrived in email format, and that's what I get to work with. Sometimes, as I say, I'm sent the manuscript. So for Time Traveler's Wife, I was given the book, and I was asked to come up with ideas. In this instance, as I say, it's quite specific what they want on the cover and what they don't want on the cover. Now, that's coming from a meeting between the Graham Greene estate and the designers. So it's quite limited in terms of what it is you can have. They don't talk about composition, but in terms of props. So that's the first indication I get of what it is I've got to try and find. In this instance, so it's clothing, jewellery, diaries and letters. I might have to admit at this point that I've never read a Graham Greene book title, which I know is going to mean I can't leave the room. But ultimately, this is what I get to work with. I promise I'll read some when I get home. A friend of mine, I was saying to Michael before we started talking, it's not just about, if you like, the taking of the picture is the end, is the kind of the means to the end. It's the gathering of the things, it's the finding. It's almost kind of curating this stuff, which I found really, really quite interesting. So I've worked in different museums. I've got a really good friend who's a military historian who has things from the First World War, Second World War, etc. And again, it's just a question, have you got anything that looks like that? Have you got anything that looks like that? So then I'm given, or lent, some quite sort of, you know, interesting, sort of delicate, sometimes priceless items. And then it's just a question of a quick digital shot to send off to get the A-OK from Vintage, the art department, to say, yep, that looks good, go ahead.
So just picking out the elements here, if I can start at the bottom, what we've got there is a plot somewhere, I take that to be the end of the affair, if I remember the book, which I think I do. So someone at Vintage has read the book, has given you, whatever it is, a dozen lines, 15 lines of summary,
yep.
And that's meant to be a guide for you as to what you might include on the cover, given the overall design for the whole series.
Yeah.
Now, just to pick that one in particular, we're going to see in a moment, we're going to use the editing there as a specific example of how you do it. But you've ended up with your End of the Affair cover, as we'll see, with a sort of diary, a handwritten diary, and there's a wedding ring on it. Now, where do you get that from, that plot summary? If you've not read the end of the affair,
back in,
yeah.
It's like English back at school. Because they like the idea of a diary and a wedding ring. That's what it says at the top. You see what I mean? I could read that and interpret it in any way, shape or form, but what they're saying is, actually, what we like, in terms of what you know, what we would like on the cover, are these items. Do you see what I mean?
Quite apart from this plot summary, you get someone else saying, what about this is an idea? Like this,
yeah. So these are actual diaries, letters home from Second World War. The wedding ring is actually a Second World War, a ring that I presume, I don't know, somebody had died in the war or subsequently he'd come across. So it's the authenticity of it that's interesting to me. So for me to actually borrow that stuff, read that stuff, to get into the mindset of it, it doesn't necessarily change what I take. But selfishly, I've really enjoyed that process.
Okay. So does that apply to all these covers then?
Yeah.
All of the covers that you've produced, someone at Vintage will have said, we like the idea of this for this, mm-hmm. Can you explore and produce some images?
Yeah.
Okay. And so, that's the final one.
So technically speaking, they're shot on a 5-4 plate camera, with a roll film back, which means you're able to, in technical terms, you can tilt the focal plane and also the film plane. So you can do this kind of thing now in Photoshop. You can probably do it on your phones, but that is done in camera. So what it produces are focal areas of focus and areas of ambiguity. So it's not word for word a diary or a letter. It's a suggestion of some written form. in a fountain pen. The wedding ring, obviously, but there are elements in focus and elements out. So what happens is it gives, technically, blank areas for them to put the word vintage and the particular author, in this case, obviously, Graham Greene, and the title.
So do you... I was spotting that about just about all of them. There are these faded areas or out of focus.
No, they're all shot exactly the same way, and that's what they wanted. It's that it's the notion of ambiguity. No one's saying this is... It's the suggestion that that would be something, if you read it, it would make sense. You see what I mean? This is not the letter or our letter or our diary referred to in the book that I haven't read. It is basically the idea that it could be. And it's that ambiguity that they like. And it meant that was the style that they wanted throughout, whether it was shot landscape or subsequently portrait.
And I think I'm right in saying that the actual title and the vintage green kind of general logo varies in position on different covers, doesn't it? It isn't always like that.
It usually is. Obviously, it would depend on if they felt they had a cracking cover or a cracking image that they couldn't do. Generally, yeah, the consistent element is the spine and the spine colour. So when you're in a bookstore and Waterstones, you can see them. And I think they work better than the original with the smaller image, because again, I'm just selfish and I quite like a bigger image on the. If they're going to use it, let's see it.
Okay. Now I'm going to ask you a really daft question.
Go on.
Of course, you've been given this brief, and you. I don't know if you remember it, but there's an outline there on the previous slide of what the alien thing is about, and I'm asking you to forget that now. You're a book buyer in a bookshop, and you come across this cover, mm-hmm. and it's not in your mind yet, but someone else. Would you buy that book?
I'd pick it up.
And is that the key thing?
Yeah, it is. It's the handling of it. There's wonderful psychology being done that X percent more likely to, if you engage with it, you're so much more likely to then maybe make that purchase. But for me, I generally turn things over, A, to see who's done the cover, and then and B, to see who's published it.
And that's an insider thing.
Yeah.
But your public like me, that first thing of getting to pick it up is the real thing.
Yeah.
So you pick that one up.
Yeah, there's a psychology too. When you walk into a store like Waterstones, the ones that are standing up, ones that are like so, ones that are flat down, there's a psychology, and also there's a commercial aspect to who gets what facing point. It's you might think it's beautifully sort of individual, but there is a certain sort of science and also commercial reality to what faces in what direction, because it will catch your eye. Particularly Christmas time, if it's Christmas Eve and it's that last minute panic buy, you know, and you walk in, it probably would be a cover that would persuade most people to think, actually, that looks quite interesting.
So if you take some of those other variables that you just mentioned, and we just take that cover, what is it about that cover that would attract you?
Technically, from a photographic point of view, because I'd quite like the way that it was shot. From a book buyer's point of view, I'd be quite intrigued just to turn it over and actually just to see if there was any more information on the back that would help maybe explain the cover. If I was used to seeing a series of them, then obviously it would be slightly more inclined to just to purchase it anyway, because ultimately, in a way, whether you wrap Graham Greene books in brown paper or you pay me to do that, people are still going to buy them. But hopefully what it does is, comes back to your initial point, it just entices people to pick it up who maybe haven't done before. And I suppose from a marketing point of view, people who have the end of the affair in different covers to think, oh, I'd like to collect that one too.
Yes.
But that's why, I suppose, if you're Random House and you license the green titles for X amount of years, I think they've now gone back to Penguin, they obviously love the work, they love the idea of the titles, and et cetera, et cetera. But there also needs to be some kind of commercial, I suppose, gain for them from licensing those titles.
So there is a, I think this was a point made in that Times article that I quoted from earlier. Someone made the point there that sometimes they're trying to sell a second or third or fourth copy of the book that a book I might already have,
yeah,
just on the basis of this is a differently packaged version. Look at this book cover. You want this done, yeah, even though you've got all the text already on your bookshelves at home.
Yeah. Definitely.
And they know that they do that. That works. That yeah. strategy works.
But I mean, if you think of it, for $6.99, you know, some people spend more than that on the coffee. So it's
to buy the image at that price.
Yeah, but also to have something which you can keep or pass on. I think it's irrespective of what's on the cover. I think it's a really, really wonderful thing to do, and I applaud the idea that we're not buying as many e-books. Mostly because they don't necessarily have covers. They buy the artwork if sometimes, or they don't have to, and I think it's a shame because it's just not the same thing.
Okay. Just going back, you go back, Paul, physically on the slides. The bit of text that we had the like and dislike. The persons who were doing the like and dislike are people of vintage.
Yeah, the designers and the commission together.
And this come from their like. There was a dislike about we didn't like the corky pair of shoes. is that a ways of escape?
I don't think so. I don't think so.
Or was that a long term?
No, they asked me to do that. I think maybe that, I think on a previous cover, there was a massive, big, sort of clunky pair of shoes. So they're basically saying that certain instances, it's the same type of prop from cover to cover to cover. But I think what they were saying is they thought that wasn't quite, I wouldn't say appropriate, just maybe wouldn't fit the series that had been developed thus far. No, they weren't. I don't think they were saying that about my thing.
So they weren't. It just happens that your ways of escape does have a pair of shoes on the ground there. And I wondered whether somebody said, "Oh yeah, we've done that. Actually, please don't do that sort of thing again."
No, that was probably one of my joint least favourites. To be fair, sometimes it's like. Whereas I think things like this and the A Man in Havana and the Tenth Man. I just think as covers, as images, I think they're just a lot more successful, and they do, you know, they do the job that they were set out to do.
Okay. Let's go to another example. I think we go on to the third now.
Oh, sorry, that is just an example. That's transparency. That's 6x9 transparency film. It's not a very good slide, but it gives you an indication of what will get sent to the publisher. So if it's 8 shots per roll. As 6x9, it means maybe you shoot 5 rolls, so 40 images will go off that you as a photographer don't see. They see them, and then the ones that they chinograph around are the ones that they're interested in, that they then are scanned and reproduced. This was, I enjoyed doing this. This meant, again, it was not only sourcing the syringes and the vials or whatever they are, but I had to make the labels to make them look like Second World War or post-Second World War penicillin, stain the labels in tea, dry them, wrap them around the bottles. So the recording of it was purely, it was done because I had to. The rest of it, the process was much more interesting than the image.
So what's the most extreme example you've got of your being given a design brief who want photographs of this sort of stuff, and you know you've got to go away and get the artifacts, the stuff. What's the most obscure thing you've had to track down for green? Or we'll come back to this particular.
I'm not sure for green. For the captain and the enemy, I had to make my bathroom look like a cloakroom. So that was finding the wood, sourcing the pegs, putting them together, screwing holes in the wall, much to my wife's annoyance, and then making it look like it was shot in a cloakroom.
We'll see that in a minute. Let's have a look at this one. This is what came from those transparencies.
Yeah.
You come into the land as a photographer, is that good stuff?
Yeah, I quite like it. The original, you can the quality is so good that the scratches on top of the zinc. It's things like that I really like. Because so when you're looking through the back of a 5x4 camera, what you do is you focus it first and then attach the film. So if you've seen olden days of a cloth covering your head, and you can look through. It's a ground glass screen, so you can pick out, you know, single kind of scratch marks and things like that. I like to do things like that, and it's sometimes it works compositionally. I think that's a tiny bit clunky, but I quite like it. I like the numbers on the thing, and I like the fact that when I look at it, that's a penicillin label that I made.
You made that.
Yeah.
And just before we go on to the next example, you said in passing early on that the brief that came down from the literary estate included the instructions that there should be no people.
It was never said, but it was never requested. So I suppose the idea being that the moment you put a face, that you'll find people who are devotees may
say that's not scolding the heart of the man.
Of course, he didn't, in my head, he didn't look like that. It was like the old days when radio DJs you never saw, and suddenly you'd see a picture and go, blimey, that's what Terry Wogan looks like, etc. Once you've seen that, you can never go back. So the idea is that it's an object, and it's 36 objects. If you're dealing with a body of work that large, it'd be difficult to say, to hit that mark with a face 36 times. So it's probably a little more straightforward to say, actually, we'll stick to objects.
You mean if you decided that faces or human figures were going to be part of the design brief, you'd be committed to that right way?
Potentially, yeah.
Because you wanted to unify the whole series.
Yeah, of course.
But if you
started with three or four, no matter which chronological order that they're commissioned in terms of the publishers, as I say, I think we started with The Comedians, Our Man in Havana, and I've forgotten. But it was those four. So if you'd started with four faces and it hadn't worked so well, then you are, a little bit stuck for such a huge body of work. And they obviously looked at larger bodies of work and realised, I suppose, the most successful are the ones that have a thread of continuity.
That's part of another question, isn't it? Because if I think back to the Penguin days, lots of people here mm-hmm. will have the old Penguins with Paul Hogarth's cartoon illustrations. And many of those are people.
Mm.
But there's a different thing there. But even when Penguin went in the Hogarth cartoons, they went in very atmospheric full-page photos. Mm-hmm. Photos, sometimes street scenes or London scenes or whatever, but quite often they had people.
Right.
But they weren't, now I think about it, they weren't recognisable people. This wasn't meant to be Scobie or Pinky or some other particular character.
Yeah.
Did you actually, this is a long-winded question I made you to, did you actually look at anything anyone else had done by way?
Yeah, I did, yeah. I looked at some of the more illustrative, the drawn. But I think by that time, once I'd done three or four, then in essence, we were off and running. So I'd always refer to them, and again, when I teach, I ask the students in the world, look beyond, look at the different types, look at styles, etc., etc. But by then, we were off and running, and it was, again, it was what I was asked to put on the cover and then shoot it in a particular way, so it wouldn't have mattered really if I'd loved or not liked so much some of the previous ones. But as I say, I think Penguin in America now have the series back, and they've done some absolutely stunning kind of woodcut, which is similar to some of the beautiful work that's here today. And again, it's that ambiguity, and it's the shapes.
They're very good.
I know, and I look at them and I think, well, fair play, they're much better than mine. I think they will, again, it is quite cyclical. You will notice that if you go to a bookstore, it's all illustration, it's all old masters' paintings, it's all photography, because they're all looking at each other, and it's almost like the fashion world, it's of an ilk. So at the moment, photography is not necessarily, the most popular, but it'll come back.
So you think your images have got a shelf life? 10 years' time, we're not.
Oh well, I don't know. I hope so. I haven't produced any for a couple of years, but.
But will they move off photography? Whether it's heading to it or not?
Well, as I say, because because the idea that if you have to commission a photographer, there's an expense involved. If you're able to design something that to sit at a computer and design it, that's not costing. So again, I suppose in straightened times, reality kicks in, and commissions get a bit thinner on the ground, really.
Let's have another image board. Now here you've got a couple of examples, mm-hmm. not of an individual novel now, but you've got collected yep. short stories and essays. Any thoughts on that? What's your photographer's reaction to what you've done on those two?
I quite like them. I really like this one. Again, that was a friend who lent me a very, very heavy typewriter, and that was photographed in my kitchen with my son, who was doing his A-level in photography at the time. I managed to hold his attention for about 20 minutes about this is how you work as a photographer, before he went off and looked at his phone. But again, it's just pick a key, any key, etc., etc. This one is just a collection of old tools. That's my friend's kitchen floor. So they're mostly shot in daylight, but I also like to have slightly odd, if I can, paint things in with torches. The Dr. Fisher of Geneva cover was a dinner table set up in my back garden, and that's a 10-minute exposure at night time. Painting in with a torch, as it, you know, leave the shutter wide open, and you... Interestingly enough, well, Elton John played at Portman Road, so... Whilst doing it, Elton John was wafting across the garden. So there's, you know, the Lord giveth, etc.
You probably don't know the answer, but I'll ask it anyway. Why have you picked that image from an old story? Is that meant to relate to a particular story?
I'm not quite sure. Again,
my collection. I can't remember what that might be.
It came through. You're making me admit again. I'm not ready. It comes through as a. You know, like old collection of household of tools, etc., etc. So it was a question of finding a nice selection of old, borrowed from a museum, of old tools. I don't know why. That's a good question. I'll ask them retrospectively. Why did you make me do that?
It must be based on, I guess it must be based on one of the stories. Somebody might tell us
that. Hopefully, yeah, hopefully.
Let's go to another one. Just power the door around.
Yeah.
I
think my father-in-law's rosary beads, and a colleague yesterday said, "Oh, is that some hair straighteners?" I'm not sure whether anyone would have, you know, I'm going to straighten your hair until you do what I say. So the straight razor that was actually shot twice, even though it looks very, very straightforward and very simple. I've still got that straight razor. It was a question of buying it, sourcing it. And again, shot in my friend's bathroom in London. The odd thing is, as I say, it's not the actual recording of it. They're not difficult photographs to take. That's kind of not the point. Really, as I say, it's the idea. When I studied photography, the lecturer would say, you know, when we shot in the studio, the camera's the very last thing that you bring in. So the art of seeing something, which I sarcastically refer to my students on a daily basis, is disappearing. To see it first and then to record it. So the idea being, as I say, that the only reason that the picture was taken was without it. There's no record and there's no reason to do it in the first place, I suppose. But just to sort of do it and to light them again. This is lit on a long exposure with a sort of a torch, etc.
And I think.
Yeah, that's my bathroom that I destroyed. We've moved house subsequently, so...
So this is
wood off a boat, pegs borrowed from a reclamation yard, etc., etc. And that is, again, it's a suitcase that we own. So, I mean, as I say, as imagery goes, they're not necessarily the most challenging, but there's a nice, from my perspective, there's a nice story behind sort of each one. That one, I think, is my favourite.
The man with it.
No, the tenth man. The tenth man. Again, that's a fob watch from an officer in the First World War that was lent to me by the same guy who lent me the other stuff. That's my old coal cellar in the house we lived in. It's quite a long exposure, etc. Standing down in a spidery cellar. But again, they are really kind of. They're very good fond memories looking at them because it reminds me of actually, you know, doing them, creating them.
Yeah. It's interesting, as a person who's read all these books, seeing the kind of difference in approaching different ones, which I guess comes down from the designer, mm-hmm. that, you know, I see Rosary Beads on Power and Glory, and there's a book by it. If I didn't know the book, I think, oh, there's a Catholic theme. So there's kind of generic yeah. feel to what's going on. But if you take the Tenth Mandate, that refers to a very specific incident in a camp mm-hmm. where some Frenchmen under the control of the Germans, and there's some business about someone having a watch.
Yeah.
A very specific incident. But I'm struck with the same thing on the Honorary Consul, where we've got a rather jazzy pair of
sunshades, yeah.
which is again a very specific incident. Someone buys that for
right.
the
yep.
store.
But weirdly, I didn't think I'd shot that one, and then I found the transparency, and I thought, oh yeah, I did remember it, but much less so. No, again,
gives some idea of a kind of courtroom drama,
yeah.
I guess.
That's a gavel that was bought again, sourced off eBay, and we've got an old church pew at home that's just on its end, and that's the ornate. So it's finding interesting stuff, but I suppose the ambiguity of it, that if the frame is yay big, you can be a bit more creative because you're not showing too much. The idea of less is more, again, when I teach the students, it's don't feel as if you have to, because you can't. If it's a 100 or 200 page novel, hundreds of thousands of words, it's not possible to illustrate everyone, so pick one particular thing. I'm not sure why they chose, I'm glad they did, but I don't know why, because again, it's like you say, it's quite a specific thing. They could have gone for a whole other visual range. Maybe they'd seen something on a cover or elsewhere in the world, or maybe someone had read that and thought, that to me is that the, you know, the important aspect.
Now, you told us that's your favourite.
I think so, yeah. That one and A Man in Havana. It was a reel of tape.
Right. Yes, the old reel of tape.
Yeah, but again, because I photographed in Cuba, so to get that, it was fantastic. It sort of brought back all that, and again, that was finding reels of tape, shooting it in that way, getting torches, certain colours, making it look like maybe it's a desk at night time, and things like that. But I quite like it compositionally. It's got a bit going on.
And just to conclude, then, we might just have a minute or two for questions from the audience. I think you mentioned in passing, your least favourite, did you say, was Ministry of Fear, which has the sort of muffin?
It's a cake. It's a cake that I had to bake that cake. It was horrible. It was absolutely solid. But I also think compositionally, it's one of those ones.
To the left of the
yeah, you, but the original had was in landscape and had 2/3 of the cake. Then it came onto the crop. But no, I look at that. It's one of those ones you go, ugh, please take my name off the back. But also the ways of escape. I think with the shoes. Because that was my back garden at the time. So again, when I look at that and think, oh my, look at the state of that lawn. But that, otherwise, no, as I say, I have great fondness for them all. It was the first time I've seen them all in this morning in that kind of run. It's great to see them.
Yeah,
your whole I know, flashing before me.
Well, I think we do have maybe a couple of minutes for one or two questions, if anyone's got a question. Has anyone got a quick question before we have John.
Well, in fact, Tim, it's more of an observation than a question. I'm thinking all the way through this, what would Graham Greene have thought about your covers? And he was, in fact, very, very particular about every aspect of publishing, particularly the covers.
That, yeah.
And he mostly liked very, very plain designs with no sort of artwork on it apart from a sort of plain background. And when somebody famously with the Honorary Consul tried to introduce a panoramic view of a river, he sent a very, very rude comment back to the publisher and said, I have no circumstances, can you publish this book with this cover? But such was his very contrary nature, and he may well have loved your work, that when Brighton Rock came out, Brighton Rock has the original edition of it has a quite an abstract front cover, nothing particular. But the American edition is very different, mm-hmm. and it does have discernible figures on it, and it's based on some photographs, and it's not dissimilar to the kind of cover that you produce here. And he said, in fact, as far as that was concerned, this was he told Viking that it was the best cover that he'd ever seen of one of his books.
Oh, good.
So you could never tell.
No.
So whether he would like them or not, I don't know.
I hope so. But
Andrew, I should warn you, is Graham Greene's grandson.
Oh, dear.
Oh, dear. Don't worry.
I was just wondering,
how many themes did you photograph before one was selected for any given book? Or did you just propose one scene?
No, that's a good question. Sometimes two or three different setups were done. A couple of times they... if you can imagine, it goes... I think Random House is a Tuesday meeting where... Everyone will present their artwork, the editors will push for this, the art directors will push for that. So usually you would either look forward to or dread the Tuesday phone call, because that would mean they like it or you've got to do it again. I had to do a couple of the Green titles again. I think the one with the keys on, is that the Confidential Agent? Yeah. And then England Made Me, that I shot pictures of ties. I never want to see another tie as long as I live. And that came back and they had, some reason, removed the background and that. And it not only doesn't look like any of the rest of them, but it was just the weirdest thing to have done. But again, unfortunately, that was out of my control. Answer your question. I suppose two or three kind of variations on a theme. The idea being is if you shoot vast variation, they might want... a kind of a hybrid, and you've got to do it again. If you shoot things which hopefully they trust your vision and judgment, if you shoot things which are similar-ish, hopefully somebody will find something within, you know, the 30 or 40 images you present that would suffice and do, you know, what it is they want you to do. But I don't mind shooting things again. It's okay. Don't sort of get too precious about it. Sometimes they'll never with the Greens, but sometimes they issue what's called a kill fee, which sounds quite horrible, and also it is quite sort of, in other words, they'll pay you and you know it's not going to be used, which has happened two or three times, which again is a bit of a shame, but it's one of those things, you know, you can't always realise the vision. If you think of if there's an author involved, and nine times out of ten there is an author involved as well. Sadly not in this case. There's a commissioning editor, there's a whole raft of people who have to say yes. In the olden days, W.H. Smith would also have a say. Whether they felt it was an appropriate illustration as well. So you had, there was kind of a minefield to get through, and as I say, I never really took it personally if they said no, but after a couple of reshoots with the Greens, that they never knocked anything back, which was great. Sorry, does that answer the question? I went on about tangent there. Variations of a theme, just by maybe moving a few elements, the same elements around a frame.
When I see the watch, you did a few photographs around that.
Yeah.
You didn't do a watch and something else and then just selected
No, not with that one. I think that was suspended, as I say, in the window where the coal used to get poured. So it was beautifully top lit and quite dingy. And I suppose because it was moving, certain times it turned, etc., out of my control. But ultimately, that was actually quite... a similar kind of sentiment, and thankfully they went for it. Otherwise, I would have shot again, obviously.
Okay, we'll have to stop there. It occurs to me I'm never going to look at my copy of Captain the Enemy ever again without thinking, that's Tim's bathroom.
Yeah, don't dwell too much.
Bathroom. I wonder what his wife was saying.
Oh, you wouldn't want to know.
But that's been really interesting, this combination of, you know, the artist at work with practical considerations and relativity between the photographer and the designer and so on, the brief that was given and so on, and those lovely images. So, Tim, thanks very much.
You're very welcome. Thank you. Thank you.